5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello and welcome to another episode of Tech Talk. It is I, Stephen Scott, back with you here once again. Lovely to have you with us. We have got Tim Schwartz back from lifeafterblindness.com. He's here as always. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Stephen. I am here. I am back. I'm alive. It's great to be here.
That's the standard we set for ourselves. I'm alive. Well,
I woke up one more day. Yes,
exactly. Not long up. That's the point. That's why you're shouting, well, "I'm alive," because you're not long up. Because it's what time is it where you are? Because we're doing this about 3 o'clock in the afternoon here, as we record this. So
it's shortly after 10 a.m. here, which typically is not bad, but considering me, it's early.
We are confusing the listener no end here because, a listener could be listening to this at any point, but if you are listening to this on Tuesday at the 1 o'clock first play, you're going to be totally confused. If you're listening on the Saturday 5 p.m, you're going to be even more confused. So we'll just tell you it's 3 o'clock. There you go. Does that make sense? We're kind of in the middle then, I guess. Emails Andy's here. Emails Andy. Hello, Emails Andy.
Hello.
Emails Andy.
Yes. Yeah. I am here. I'm wide awake and bushy-tailed.
Beautiful. Mm. We also have none other than the great, the amazing... Oh, no, hang on. Robin couldn't make it this week. Oh, it's Sean Preece. Hi, Sean.
Oh, dear. Aww. I mean, not only am I confused, and apparently I need to say I am alive, but now you're taunting me. I don't know why I'm here.
Yes, you do. You love it. You secretly adore it. You do love it. And you know
what? I can't keep away.
Do you know why he's here this week? Because I told him it was all about... the emails, yes.
Email, we get email.
Email, email.
We get your email every day.
We do get your emails every
ding
day.
Dong.
Here's your mail today.
And an incredible amount of spam email goes to that account as well, which is always interesting to me. Anyway, we got a lot of that.
Hate.
And hate.
Fury.
Fury. Yeah, exactly. It's like a Donald Trump book in our email.
We've been saving up all the hate mail towards Sean, so here we go.
Yeah, we've got it all here. How many pages of hate do we have?
It's great to be back.
Yeah, you'll be glad you picked this one. Let's get into the emails this week because that's what we're going to do. We're just going to get right through the email inbox. We're going to do a clear out today. We're going to get that email looking pristine, guys, by the end of the show. Maybe not this show, but we'll certainly try. So let's dive right in. What's first up in the list?
Okay, page 1 of 7. Hello, great Tech Talk team. Thank you for always enlightening programs and useful tips along the way. Oh, there's no reaction to that. Oh, that's a surprise. Anyway, I'll continue. Today I would like to share my frustration with the Amazon company when it comes to ethics. I know that lots of gadgets, applications, and audiobook sharing platforms are owned by Amazon, as we, as users, are often left with little choice. As the company expands its financial empire and buys competing companies in a greedy manner, I find it more and more irritating that the Amazon brand is so dominant when it comes to items that we as visually impaired people are dependent on. Personally, I have never bought anything from Amazon. I actively boycott that company. I'd rather pay more to find alternatives or simply do without certain items that could be useful. I know that my action towards a company makes no difference to them, but it gives me some joy just to know that they get no support from me. And above all, I find it so disgusting how the owner finds no better way to use his enormous capital than to burn it up in space, when half of it could have eradicated malaria or been used to vaccinate the entire third world against COVID-19, etc., etc. This is not meant to criticize you, and by you, he means us, when it comes to recommended items from Amazon, but I wonder whether you have ever struggled morally when you know how the company is run and bulldozes over smaller companies and expands its influence in, as I see it, a very greedy and inhumane way. It only adds to my irritation when I hear how many of the employees are treated and have to work like dogs to increase the revenue for the richest man in the world. Thank you for listening to my frustration. It helped me lift a lid off of the fuming kettle. Please continue your great work with the Tech Talk and have a great summer. Best wishes. That's from Odd Oddsby.
Well, thank you, Odd, and there goes that Amazon interview. Well, no,
amazing name.
A representative from Amazon will never grace our doorstep again. No, look, do you know, I think Odd brings up an interesting point. I mean, you know, I don't necessarily agree with a lot of that, Odd, but I absolutely think you're right to put that opinion across. I'm really keen to hear you guys, what you think about this, because I think for me, it is a bit of a battle. I mean, I've seen this debate unfold on Twitter as well and on other platforms, and I've heard this debate already, and I think I fall on the place of, you know, as a disabled person, I do find that the service they provide in terms of customer experience, in terms of buying a product that you can get next day, in some cases and within hours, it makes my life so much easier. It allows me to get access to products I wouldn't necessarily get access to, try products, sending them back, returns is a breeze and all that. And I think it just, you know, people say, well, that's great marketing. And it's like, well, yeah, but, you know, it's easy when you can just jump to the shops in the car, or you can drive off to the nearest superstore and you can buy whatever you want. But when you're blind or disabled, you don't have that choice necessarily. You know, if you're blind and your partner's sighted, yeah, you can do that and that's great. But if you're in a position like I am, where my wife and I are both visually impaired, we can't just jump in a car and go. I mean, yes, we can get a taxi somewhere. But then, you know, if you buy something big like a computer, for example, you got to jump in a taxi to get home. You can't just jump on the bus with that. You know, it's difficult. You've got to everything's considered a lot more. And, you know, if you can just click buy and it's here, then it makes life a lot easier, right? So, you know, I think that's I know it's a difficult one to square, and I know people would write in and say, well, what about the humanity of the company and the morals and the ethics and all that? I get it. I don't think every company is clean. I don't think there's a company on earth that can probably say it's clean completely. It might be the case that Amazon is more unclean than others. I don't know. I honestly don't know the answer to that. Some might argue it, but I don't think we know is the truth. I mean, people could have the same argument against Apple and their treatment of workers recently in China in China. Other companies might be doing the same. I mean, remember back in, what was it, the 90s with Nike and all the hassle there with, you know, the way Nike. They were, Nike, or Nike, whatever. I don't wear fashion. The only brand I'm interested, well, you know, the only brand I ever pay any homage to, you know, clothes-wise, not so much. But the
Apple
point,
trainers, I know.
Yeah, if they made shoes, they'd be the best shoes. But yeah, it's a really interesting point. What do you guys land?
No, stop it. Sorry, but no. It's really interesting to me that people, as soon as a company reaches a certain level, suddenly it becomes evil. You know, as soon as it becomes a success story, suddenly, well, then there must be some shady practices going on. No, not at all, not necessarily. You could look at it that Amazon actually, as a platform, are leading the way for people to start businesses. You know, the way that Amazon works, you can sell your things through their platform. Yes, they take a bite of the every transaction. That's how he can afford to build a rocket. But it's not necessarily a bad thing. It sort of goes back to the supermarkets versus the mum and popper bakery or butchers. You know what I mean? It's that image that smaller is somehow a better service. And the fact of the matter is, it just isn't. As you said, Stephen, it's about convenience. The fact that we get these things next day, the fact that I can grab my phone, browse through a good price and buy something and have it the next day, it's just so damn convenient. That's why it's successful. Now, it's not to say it shouldn't be watched and picked up on any practices that it does when it comes to employment and working environment. That isn't the right thing to do. But just because something is successful doesn't mean it's evil.
Well, hang on. Let me bring Tim in on this, because I have seen the argument made online, Tim, that criticising Amazon, I did see this, and I don't know if this is an outlier view. I think it might well be that, you know, criticising a company like Amazon is ableist, because you're essentially saying that a company like that that is providing, you know, easy service to a lot of people, which does benefit the disabled community, to try and sort of do that down is somehow discriminating towards disabled people. Would you go that far with it?
No, I would not go that far with it, because here's the deal. Have Amazon have they had practices that are questionable? Yes. Have they had working conditions in their warehouses and shipping facilities that are, you know, poor or you know, improper? Absolutely. Up until recently, had they been underpaying those employees for the, you know, the bad conditions they were working in and the long hours that they were working and things, and not paying them at a competitive price? Absolutely. Now, some of those things have recently been taken care of. There's actually an Amazon distribution center not probably 10 or 15 miles from my house. So I'm familiar with a lot of people that do work there, and conditions have gotten better. But is it where it should be? I don't fully know, but I know that in the past it's not been the best, and they have worked on that. The fact that we would speak to that, or if people that work there say what's going on and they tell the truth, telling the truth about a situation, despite the fact that it might be a company that makes things accessible for us, speaking that truth doesn't make it ableist. It just means you're speaking the truth. So I don't buy into that. I mean, yes, they do provide services, many of them, that are wonderfully accessible to us, like you and Sean were both talking about. And there's a lot of things that, you know, that I'm able to accomplish in life and purchase and have delivered and, you know, and have provided to me so much more easily than I would any other way. And I wouldn't be able to do that without Amazon. So that's a wonderful thing. And it is a wonderful service for everybody, but specifically for people that are blind or disabled that maybe can't get out or aren't able to get out and need that delivery and need it next day. We won't talk about the next keyboard that I've fried a little bit, and I have a keyboard on its way.
Did you buy the Logitech MX keys I told you to buy?
You bet I did.
Oh, good. Absolutely. Man.
Yes, I can't wait. So,
did
yeah.
Did you swing that?
How did I swing what?
Well, I mean, getting the okay from, you know, Mrs. Tim, that you could spend that amount of money on a keyboard that you broke.
I spent my birthday money and an Amazon gift card that I had, so, you know. Anyway. I don't think that slamming a company like Amazon or any other company that provides a accessible service, I don't think that's ableist, but I don't think it's wrong to speak out.
Well, I don't think the suggestion is slamming the company is ableist. I think it's that slamming it because you're focusing purely on the morals and the ethics rather than focusing on the services it provides. Essentially saying essentially saying disabled people need access to services, and this company provides them, and we shouldn't do that down.
And we do need access to services, yeah. And they do provide it, but so many other companies provide certain things. I mean, there are certain takeaway apps that I know specifically two of us, at least here, would not be able to live without. You correct. Know, that
four.
Yes. Four, well,
they can
four
remember
of us.
Their passwords, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So, don't get me started on that one.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, they provide a service that many of us nowadays can't live without, and especially this last year and a half couldn't live without.
Well,
but
that's an interesting point as well, right? I mean, if another company comes along, and there are a couple of companies I can think of out there that are doing similar things, that are trying to compete, because it is, I mean, obviously Amazon's a behemoth. It's a huge company. It's worldwide. There's lots of companies local to the UK, local to the US, that may not be able to get the logistics together to be able to beat that, at least on price. I sometimes look at the pricing on Amazon and I think, I don't know how you guys can do this. I don't know how you make money, because when you think about the logistics involved, they're cutting money off things, and I think, how do you even make any cash? But obviously they make it in other ways, right? So fair enough. But the point is that it seems to me, if another company came along and did it just as well, we'd use it as well, right? I mean, it's not like we're all suddenly obsessive with that one company. If a company does well, whatever company it is, like the food delivery company, that's a great example. You know, if the one food company is better than the other, we'll use the other one, right? I mean, that's just how it works. That's how consumerism works.
Well, and here's the thing. There's a lot of unethical practices within many different companies, the way they treat.
That's what I said earlier, yeah.
Say, for instance, in different food companies or restaurants, maybe the way that they treat the animals that you know, we're eating, you know, whether it's fish, you know, salmon, chickens. I've read and seen a lot of different things in documentaries on how they treat those animals and what happens to them. We still go to those restaurants and eat. Is that the right thing to do? maybe ethically, probably not. There's a certain favorite sandwich of mine that comes out once a year from a favorite place of yours that we discussed recently that I won't mention the sandwich. But it's been trying to tiptoe around that one. The rib sandwich, yes, is been tested to be mostly plastic in its makeup. I still eat it and love it, and it's wonderful, and I don't care when I'm eating it. But
I've had so many stories about
it. It is not plastic.
I've had so many stories about fast food, though, and I honestly, I couldn't care less. That's the honest. You know, anybody who knows me knows it's like it could be made of car parts, and I'd probably still eat it. You know, I mean, it wouldn't make a difference.
That's the thing. Where do we draw that ethical line when we're saying, you know, how are they treating their employees? How are they getting their manufacturing done? Are they doing it in third world countries and paying nothing? You know, are they making their food out of plastic? Are they, you know, treating the animals inappropriately? If we, it's the catch 22, because part of me would say, well, I would love to boycott those kind of places and not give them my money. But then sadly, what would be left? You know, that's kind of the fear. It's like, well, if I boycotted everybody that had inappropriate practices, I'm not sure what would be left, quite honestly. So I do get it. I do understand the sentiment behind it. And I'm, you know, good on him for standing up to
and
Amazon and
choice.
Saying, I'm not going to buy your.
Exactly. Right.
And that's the point I was getting to. That's your individual choice to say, you know what? I don't believe in what they do, so I'm not going to buy their products. I'm going to buy Microsoft, I guess, because they give money for vaccinations. And he mentioned malaria and things, you know, the studies and things that are done and the money sent to other countries.
But hang on, Tim. We all remember, though, I mean, fairness of all the great things Microsoft have done, we always have to remember they made Skype. You just got to remember that. I like to put that in there.
Well, this is true.
They came up with this thing called Skype. And, you know, I think for that, frankly, we should never speak to them ever again.
This is fair.
Let's move on, Andy. What else have we got in the inbox?
Right. Continuing on. So this next one just starts. Talkers. So a while ago, Karen wrote to you asking for a recommendation for a smartphone with a keyboard. And you recommended that she try a smartphone paired with a Bluetooth keyboard.
Mm, yeah, that's right, yeah.
I have an additional suggestion, says Greg in Pennsylvania, as one who hates trying to type on my iPhone. And while I do have a folding full-size keyboard with a number pad, it's often a lot more than I want to carry around. I carry in my shirt pocket a neat little device called an Rivo, an R-I-V-O, which is a small credit card-sized keyboard designed specifically for voiceover users. And with it, I can completely control my iPhone with tactile controls without ever having to take my phone out of my pocket. And you can easily navigate and operate all controls on the iPhone, and text entry is the old way of entering text since we used our old Nokia phones and the Victor readers. Or you can set it up in a QWERTY arrangement as well. I wouldn't wish to write a novel with it, but it's great for rating an Uber driver or just entering a phone number and so forth, whilst being highly portable and convenient. I believe, he says, David Woodbridge has done an extensive demonstration on this wonderful device on an episode of his IC podcast. Plug, plug, plug. Of course, as a specialised device, it's more pricey than your typical keyboards. Anyway, that's an email from Greg in Pennsylvania.
That's interesting. Is that a specialist device? I thought that was pretty mainstream, the Revo keyboard. From my memory, and because there was a new one, there's a Revo 2 that came out. I know that Steve Nutt sells them over at Computer Room Services, but I didn't think it was a specialist thing. But there you go. Okay, that's interesting. I mean, I love all this kind of stuff. I do. I mean, I remember there was a product. I think Tim, you'll remember this. The 06. I think it was 06 or the 06. I can't remember if it was 0 or 0, yep. But it was like a rotary dial type thing. I mean, it was almost like something you would imagine someone might have. I think this was actually how it was designed. Almost like something that would stick onto a steering wheel of a car, and you'd be able to control your phone using this device. But it did also focus on blind users, and you could sort of turn this little dial, and then you could just push it as, you know, you wanted to. So, for example, if you're on the keyboard, you could then sort of, you know, rotate to the letter you want and then push the button for the letter or whatever. But it was basically a way of operating your phone just with a single dial. Which sounded quite cool, but I haven't heard of it since. It kind of came along. The website's still there for it, but I don't know if people are buying it or whether it's the products have stopped going. But I don't know, guys. Is it just me? I tend to just go back to the regular keyboard, or dictation these days is my thing at the moment. I mean, I actually find Siri not too bad for dictation. I will say, though, anytime we are communicating, I really dread putting in tech talk into the name, because it always changes it to TikTok, which is very irritating.
Oh, no. That's ageist, surely.
Well, I don't know what TikTok it should is. Be, exactly. There should be a setting on your phone based on age to make the language appropriate to your age. Like, I'm never going to say the words TikTok in my life. Unless I'm saying my watch isn't doing that TikTok thing anymore. Yes, that's the only acceptable. Yeah, exactly. So the only acceptable use of it. My Apple Watch doesn't go TikTok.
You can remove these age limitations on your phone by just whispering in there. If you start singing the Windows 95 startup thing or something, that activates old person mode.
It should know, because it's hearing, obviously it's listening to me all the time, so it should know that I'm, you know, if I'm watching The Golden Girls or Frasier, then it should be able to appropriately assess the situation, I think. Or Murder, She Wrote. I'm a huge fan of Murder, She Wrote.
I Love Lucy again, and he's in bed by that. 9.
Yeah, is that Sean you're talking about? Oh, he's half eight. Half eight for
Thank you,
Sean.
Yes. Early to bed, etc. I think typing is one of the trickiest things of a smartphone still. I don't think it's anything they've really perfected yet.
No.
And even using a Bluetooth keyboard on the iPhone, I still find it hard to navigate through text that I've written to make any changes. I still find that not quite as easy as it should be.
When I'm using a Bluetooth keyboard, I typically will type it out, and then if I need to move back, I go back to the iPhone screen so I can navigate back and forth
exactly.
in the text.
Exactly, but why is that?
Yeah.
Why have they not sort of nailed that down? Or is it a case that I don't use it enough, like a Bluetooth keyboard, that I've actually learnt how to do that? I don't know.
Well,
it
I would say
seem that,
that
easy.
And I would say that we could be saved by third-party keyboards, but our favorite one of those is no longer available. I don't know if you guys saw this, but FlickType has discontinued.
Oh, you're joking, has it?
Yeah, because of all the issues that they've had with development and trying to work with Apple as a third-party keyboard. I guess even though they support third-party keyboards, it's not easy to develop and keep up. So, yeah, they've had to discontinue FlickType. So it's frustrating because, yeah, okay, Bluetooth keyboard, but then you have to partially use the on-screen, you know, keyboard, but then, you know, third-party keyboards are just so tricky. So yeah, it's a tricky one. But I mean, I wish there was a better way. There should be.
Yeah, it's
FlickType for a long time. FlickType was
that was
a
the easiest way.
Yeah,
it was the best way. Yeah, it was so easy. Yeah, it's a shame.
Okay. Well, that's got us all down. Thanks, Tim. Okay. Well, moving
Sorry.
On.
Sorry,
yeah, Tim. That's your fault.
Yeah, it's all my fault.
I feel like it's the end of the show. I have to go now and cry. Right, what else have we got? Thanks, Greg, for that email. Who else have we got there?
Yeah, just to follow in, the first two searches for Revo were bringing back computer room services and another accessible site as well. So maybe it is a piece of accessible technology.
Interesting.
So we have a thank you and a response from Negative Julian. Hello, chaps. Negative Julian here. I'm writing again so soon after last time because I failed in my objective. Thank you for playing my test of the Google Lookout app. I had two objectives in sending it. Number one was to encourage people to give it a go because it's a very good app. And number two was to provoke a discussion of how to encourage our community to use tech more. And in this, I failed. Let me explain. I have nothing against people spending as much as they can afford on any equipment that they want. I'm not getting it you, Stephen. Clearly you have married into money and you have a generous wife, but the fact is that you will spend more on a keyboard than I would on a core piece of accessibility tech, and I love my tech, says Julian. Whether we like it or not, the fact, as I understand it, is that the vast majority of blind and severely sight-impaired people are not in paid employment. A natural follow-on to that is that we tend to exist on fixed and low incomes. It seems to me, therefore, that price must be a barrier to entry for many sight-impaired people who might otherwise be intrigued by at least one facility that a smartphone will give them. Sadly, price may always seem an insurmountable barrier to some, but surely there are others whom the difference between, say, £100 and £500 is very significant. Tell them to pay £500 and they will balk at it. How can they risk that much on something that they might not get on with? that they might not be able to master at all or even break. Tell them that they could experiment for £100 and maybe, just maybe, that they'll take the risk. I know that some people will say that Tech Talk is the wrong forum for this. Why would someone not be interested in tech be listening in the first place? That misses the point. Most people, during their blindness journey, will be getting advice on how to cope, and with the best will in the world, their advisors will tend to suggest the solutions that have already worked for them. These experienced people may well be listening. Very often their experience is Apple, and dispute it or not, Apple is more expensive. This is what happened to me. My site went from normal to practically nothing in less than a week. As I slowly learned to cope, I was pointed at Apple. Android was mentioned, but in the main theme it was Apple, 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 because that's what my advisor knew. I might not have gone that way, was I not already an Android user and I was tech confident. If I had been less experienced and short of money, who knows what I would have done. I really have nothing against the mighty orchard fruit, although I'm reminded of what happened to Adam after he took a bite. I guess that we will not be seeing you on a nudist beach anytime soon, Stephen. How much are fig leaves nowadays?
Wow.
Regards. What? Negative Julian.
I'm disturbed on many
that
levels.
That took a turn, didn't it?
Yeah, it did, yeah.
I was very negative.
He doesn't go on beaches, he goes on cruises, Julian. So
that's right, yeah.
It might be a nudist cruise.
Yeah, this is a really interesting debate as well. We're all very philosophical this week. Price. It's the endless conversation. And it's so funny you bring this up, Julian, because I was talking to someone the other day about the genesis of this program and how it came about. And it came about simply because I had been sick and tired of hearing of all the specialist tech. And before you start writing your emails, hang on. I was sick to death of hearing about all this specialist tech that was running into the thousands and thousands of pounds. And I was hearing about it, and I'm thinking to myself at the time, this was just around the time the iPhone had become accessible, and I thought, must be alternatives out there. There must be other options out there. Now, they might not be as perfect as the specialist options because they're built to do the job. Fine, fair enough. But what else is out there? What is mainstream? What is off the shelf? Now, at that time, when we started the show, there wasn't a lot. Well, there wasn't as much as there certainly is now. I mean, you think about the things that have changed over the last 10 years. A huge amount of tech has become available to us, mainstream tech. And that's what this show was set out to achieve. And it was actually based on the argument of price. That was the real reason we started the show. We actually, I remember the first meeting I ever had about this program. The conversation went along the lines of, I'm sick of hearing about how expensive everything is. There must be a cheaper option. And it's so funny that we zoom forward 10 years and we're now having the same conversation about price, but from the mainstream point of view. And I think that it's just really interesting that we're at that space. I feel, yes, price is always going to be a challenge for anybody, right? I mean, you know, I talk about all the stuff I buy. Now, Sean, you don't go out and spend the amount of money I do. You just laugh at me and how much ridiculous amounts of money I spend on tech, right?
I wait till you get bored of it and send it to me.
That's right, yeah. And Tim, you're the same, right? I mean, we're talking about, but you're talking about like £70 for or dollars for a keyboard, right? And you're thinking, well, you know, I'm going to have to think about that purchase. You're not going to outspending.
Well, and in purchasing this keyboard, I got what Amazon calls renewed, or what we used to call refurbished. So I could save $25 off the price and use the gift card that I got for my birthday. So I was very, you know, aware of the price, because yeah, if it had been $100 or $130 just out of the box as a married person with a 9-year-old child, where we have, you know, karate and school things and other, you know, other things to take care of as a family. Yeah, I'm not going to buy a $100 plus keyboard. Now, back when I was a bachelor and before having a family, I wouldn't have thought probably twice about spending that kind of money on a keyboard. But I have other things that I have to consider. And so, yeah, getting it renewed at a cheaper price and using birthday money is what I had to do. If I didn't have that, I don't know that I would have bought that particular keyboard. I would have just bought yet another $15, you know, Microsoft keyboard or whatever. So it is tricky, because there are mainstream products that are quite expensive, but there are some that are not. You know, it's that Android debate that we talk about, and that's why we have been happy to see things like the iPhone SE that can be a little bit more competitive in its price against some of those Android phones that are lower cost.
I've got one here.
Yeah, exactly. So it just...
Sorry. just arrived. It was ridiculous. Excited. I got a bit excited.
You're so happy.
I am.
Yeah, so I mean, there are all different price points, and I think it's important to talk about both, where we talk about, okay, what is the specialist tech? If you can get it, if you're able to, you know, get the funding for it or you know, invest in it, great if it can do what you need it to do. But what else is there? Like you said, Stephen, what mainstream product, you know, because that's the thing that I think is forgotten sometimes is the products that are made, you know, specialist tech products. We're talking 2-3, you know, 4,000 quid for,
yeah,
you know, something that's very specifically designed, whereas we might be able to get it mainstream for half that, maybe even less than that. So it is an ongoing debate.
Do you know, I often do wonder if I'm taking this the wrong way with what I talk about, because when I think about this, right, and I'm putting this to you, both of you, Sean and Tim, because I think you both are the best people to answer this, actually. So I come to this from the point of view of, clearly I've got a bit of expendable income. I do have a very forgiving wife who will say to me, do what you like, it's up to you. We don't have kids, right? We don't have kids. I don't have the... I was going to say the problem. That doesn't sound right. I don't have the challenge of children. Let's put it that
responsibility,
way. The costs,
I think the word
associated.
Is.
Responsibilities. Yeah, let's go with, yeah, that. Okay.
According to this email, you've married into money, Stephen, which is...
Well, I think my wife would like to hear more about that. I don't know, because I don't know. Yeah. She's not aware of it. But no, I mean, you know, look, I'm doing well in my career. Things are doing all right. I've got a bit of a spare income, right? So that's fine. But, you know... I do think about, okay, so what about if you're not in that position? Now, Sean, it's widely known because I've said it on the show and you have as well. You're not in employment at the moment.
Talking of the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not in full-time employment at the moment. Neither are you, Tim. You've retired out of it. You know, am I doing this the wrong way? Should I be focusing on the lowest end? Should we be doing a race to the bottom when it comes to tech?
No. Actually, I think we're talking about two separate things here, because... Negative Julian mentioned there that it's about getting people to actually use tech in the first place. And of course, price comes into that. And as he rightfully said, and you just mentioned about, you know, low income and employment rates amongst our community, accessibility isn't just software features, it is also price. But it's not just that as well. When it comes to getting people interested in and wanting to use tech, I still hear people saying, oh, it's not for me. You know, I won't be able to do it. And I think there is that fear of technology still, even though technology has become far more mainstream over the past decade, people still do have a fear of it. And I think the great thing about shows like this is that, you know, you show actually this is how it can make things better. You know, something like a service like Aira, it's not overstatement to say it can change people's lives. Getting some independence back. And tech allows you to do that. And yes, price is important, but to be honest, look, if someone's introduced to it either an Android phone or an iPhone at the start of their journey, if you like, then they will make that work, because the accessibility is there in both platforms. And it's almost a side, you know, you can get into the iPhone ecosystem at a fairly low rate if you look at SE or whatever it may be, or secondhand.
I was going to say, do the renewed thing, yeah. I mean, you can get them for a bit the same price as you can get a low-end Android.
Exactly right, exactly right. But it's all about where we start, what we get used to, what we learn. That's usually what we tend to stick with. And I just don't think price is purely the thing. Now, that's different to the price of specialised tech and mainstream. I think that's far more of a...
It's a whole other debate, isn't it?
Yes, yes. And you know, specialised tech, like Braille displays, are totally different to something like, I would say, a standalone OCR, which I just honestly don't see a need for anymore, because you can do all that on your smartphone. But yeah, that's different. But I think there's two points to this argument about getting this, our community, or certain people in our community, to realise that just how helpful tech can be.
What do you think, Tim?
I think Sean's absolutely right. There are multi-layers to this conversation, and it's why we're here, honestly. Like you were talking about the beginning of Tech Talk, and I know Sean got into this, you know, whole podcast tech discussion game himself many years ago for similar reasons. It's why I started Life After Blindness. It's a way to have us who are such big tech nerds about this kind of thing and looking at it all the time and going, hey, let's let other people know about this. Let's talk about this. Let's have conversations about it. You know, I didn't start a podcast because I knew it was going to make me millions of dollars. That is not why I, if that was the reason that I did it for the, for,
it just happened. Yeah, that's right.
No. I wish. Holy heck, I wish.
You married into money as well, too.
Married into money as well. That's right. All of us did, yes. No, but like, I never expected, and it never has happened either, to make any kind of money off being a podcaster. And that's okay because of the fact that this might sound cheesy, might sound whatever, but it's true. And I think that if you know, all of us are being honest, it is honestly true that we do this and we talk about these things because we want people to get better with tech, like what you know, Negative Julian was saying. We want people to know what's available, whether it's very inexpensive or if it is exorbitantly expensive. We're here to say, here's what's out there, here's what's available, here's what we've used, here's what we've heard of other people using, and give it a try because it's not as scary and daunting as you might think. And, you know, and we're going to talk about all of it because it's important to help us with our accessibility, with our independence. And I don't know, I just, price does come along and it is part of the conversation, but
I think it's because I talk about Apple. So when I talk about Apple products, people immediately say, well, they're expensive.
Perhaps, yeah.
And yet Apple products do start at a higher end than, you know, you can get low-end Androids for that.
So are HumanWare, and so is...
relatively, though. I mean, in terms of smartphones. So if you're talking iPhone, yes, you're looking at the alternative, which is Android. Then, you know, of course you can get an Android phone for, you know, 100 quid, even sometimes less than 100 quid. You can get the Nokia is for about 80. And, you know, and Motorola, I would say, if you're looking for a low-end Android, I think Motorola is the great place to start because my first experience of Android and accessibility... Probably the best experience I ever had, and I think it was the G5, and I loved that phone. That was actually the one Android phone. If I was switching, that was what I would have switched to. I haven't tried any Motorola's since, but I just remember that first experience. I never really got it after that, never really enjoyed it as much. But again, for me, it's difficult to make. I see people, you know, they write on forums and they say, oh, Stephen Scott doesn't like this, and it's not about that. It's just this is my experience. This is what I like. You know, if you like coffee, that's fine. It doesn't mean I absolutely hate tea. I just like coffee. You know, and
you hate Android.
I don't hate Android.
Email.
Hang on. There we go. Right. No, I don't hate Android. Of course, I don't hate Android. That's ridiculous. I mean, if I had the point is, if I'd used Android first, I'd be sitting here going, Android's the greatest thing ever. Apple, what do they know? And I'd feel all superior because I could say, you can get one of my phones for less than 100 quid. That's the difference. I didn't. I started with Apple and that's the end of it. And, you know, I have to say, it's all a product of your environment. When I was at school, mid-90s, I was getting, you know, the use of Apple Mac computers then. So I was into the Apple bubble and it didn't help the fact that in the visual impairment unit that I was in, I never forget the guy's name, Aiden. I won't say his second name, but Aiden, who was actually the son of the what?
That's very good, Aiden and abetting.
Oh, I see.
Oh,
right,
well done, Sim.
That's went right over Stephen Seddon.
I did a bit. Well, I didn't hear that. I'm sorry, I didn't hear that at all. But well done.
That's all right. Continue, please.
So, thank you. But yeah, the teacher who actually ran the visual impairment unit, her son would come in, and he was a huge Apple nerd, and we would just sit and geek out for hours on end. I mean, supposed to be doing schoolwork, right? But that, I'll get to. It might explain a lot about my education. But, you know, I spent a lot of time with Apple products and him talking about them, and it just got me excited about it, and that's what got me into that world. That was before iPhones and everything else. But the fact is that you just get yourself into a world, and like most people might have done with Windows and Android and whatever else, that's where you end up. But... it's an interesting discussion. I think you're right in some ways, Julian. You know, getting back to your actual point, I guess, which is that, you know, people starting out might not want to spend a lot of money. I totally get that. So
might just be they can't spend a lot of money, which is a bigger issue. And And I think that's a conversation that's bigger than us and for maybe another time. But, you know, that is definitely a problem with our community specifically, that, you know, with so many people that do not have employment, it is difficult to spend the money, even if it's just a little bit of money. I know people that are blind or visually impaired that can't even afford to buy like an Echo Dot because, you know, it might be, you know, 30 or 40 quid. But to them, that's still a lot of money. You know, so it's something to consider.
Yeah, we need more schemes. I mean, do you remember the Get Online at Home scheme that happens in the UK? I think it still exists, where you can get a computer, it's refurbished, for like 100 quid or 150 quid. Yep. I think you can get a laptop.
We have that here too.
You've got that as well. That's right. And it's a great scheme. I think it's often office computers that, you know, they get used for like 3 years and then they all get shipped off because they've done their bit and that's it. And of course, it's all on lease. So these computers are actually perfectly decent machines, just get put to the side. Well, often charities get hold of these computers and they're able to sell them very cheaply. And, you know, they come with accessible software on them, so they're ready to go if you're blind. You don't have to worry about that. If you want NVDA on it, they'll put it on there. I wish there was something like that for smartphones. Maybe there is. If there is, let me know. Tell me about it, because then we can share the information out. But it'd be good. You think with the amount of smartphones that I accrue, you know, I could probably start my own business right here.
The Stephen Scott Forgotten Tech Fund.
The Stephen Scott Benevolent Fund. I'm more than happy to have my, well, not my new SE. You're not getting that. But, you know. But, yeah, there's lots of stuff. It's actually some Android phones here you're welcome to have. Anyway, moving on. Thanks, Julian.
He hates them.
Right, Andy, what else have we got?
Hello, Aidan. Yeah, if you're listening. I don't know if he might be listening. Your friend Aidan.
Well, that was 30 years ago, so possibly. Possibly not. Who knows?
Right, okay, so we're two pages down. We've got five left. This next one is from Will. And I need to apologise to Will, because last time I called him William. Sorry, Will.
Oh, dear.
He says, just listening to your discussion of Windows 365, and I thought I'd share my impression of it. Latency would be an issue, and I'm not sure my internet connection is stable enough to handle it. If you rely on a screen reader to access it, then you'd have two screen readers running at the same time, i.e. the local one and then the remote one, and this is possibly going to confuse you. Another point to make is whether it even makes sense for home users. Most things that run on Windows, except for games, seem to run on the Mac platform. So unless you have a Windows-specific app like Goldwave, then you probably wouldn't need it. However, if you're a huge gamer, as I imagine Andy is then, yes, and Stephen, since you're going to need to spend £300 to £500 on a machine, or on a local machine, then why would you not spend the extra money on a machine that can do what you need it to do in terms of performance? I mean, if you need it for more than 1 month, you may as well get a better local machine. That's an email from Will.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. So Windows 365, which I have to say, I don't know what's going on with Windows 365. I have had no joy with it whatsoever. Now, it is only for companies. And at the moment, I have been able to get my hands on a early version of what Windows 365 is. I can't get it to work. Just will not work. No matter what I do, no matter how I try, it will not come to life. It just keeps wanting me to reset the PC constantly. Now, I'm guessing these will be virtual machines. They're not going to be physical boxes sitting in a rack somewhere. It may be one machine on a physical machine kind of thing. But yeah, I don't know what's going on. I can't get it to work. But from the other people I have spoken to who are using it, and I have requested that they focus primarily on audio, you know, for playing audio back and for all that kind of thing. Not so much with screen readers, but, you know, it would apply anyway. The results aren't great. The results are not great. Someone playing music from an Adobe Audition project said they were experiencing stuttering and lag, bad latency from it. So, you know, from a productivity point of view, I don't know how this is going to work. I imagine these devices, these particular Windows 365 machines, are going to be used by people in offices who use spreadsheets, who use Outlook, who use Word. It's going to be the office applications. And to me, that seems, in some ways, I don't know, it just seems odd to me, because can't you just do all that online? I mean, yes, I know, let's talk about the blind angle on this. Yeah, that's a different ballgame. That wouldn't work as well. But for most workers who are sighted and are not disabled, why would you not just use the web version? So I don't really know what's going on. I do know, however, sometimes there are systems that are closed off under behind VPNs and what have you that mean that a company would want you to log into a system that is not... I mean, my wife does this through her job. She has to log into a system in order to use it because she's not allowed to just have a local version of it because of the kind of job she does. She's not a spy, but, you know, she's very important. And more important than I am, that's for sure.
Paid very well, though.
Yeah, loaded.
Absolutely. Millions from being a spy. No, she's not a spy. But, you know, that's the thing, right? So she's having to do that. So she's logging into a virtual machine. And the experience is okay, but it's just, you know, she's literally, I mean, this is so bizarre. She goes in and then goes into a web browser to work, which is just, I don't even understand any of that. But, you know, that's what she has to do because it has to be behind that particular setup. So that's what this is being used for. For home users, guys, who's going to use this? I mean, Sean, what are you going to do with a Windows 365 machine? Are you going to want one of these?
Yes, absolutely.
Why?
I want yours. I want it now. Look,
no, you don't need
it. The point is, you've got a 24/7 persistent computer running, and you can access that from anything that's able to run a browser, be that a smart TV, be that your iPad, Amazon Fire tablet, whatever can run a browser. You can access a powerful, persistently running, never turned off Windows PC.
I've got that now, here right now. I've got one, two, three. I've got three of them sitting here right now.
Well done you.
Thanks.
Well, look, when you're out and about at some point and you haven't got access to your local PC, you can jump on anything with a browser to get onto that. And there is something great about that. Now, it depends on your use case, obviously it does. And this is all a bit of a moot point because, you know, Microsoft have been a bit low-key about it coming to consumers anyway.
And they paused the rollout. I don't know if you saw this, but they actually paused the rollout. I think there have been a few issues. I think, first off, demand. Big, big, big demand for this, which is great for business. And it is only for business users at the moment. It's not being rolled out for consumers, I think, until later in the year. But yeah, some big issues around demand and therefore the system not coping, which is maybe why my machine won't work.
Why you're having problems, and maybe why there's those issues of lag. Because maybe it's a case of promising too much, because actually being able to do something productive, such as video editing, audio editing, over a network on a virtual PC and expecting zero or, you know, very little latency is a lot to ask. And maybe that's something that will come, or maybe it's something that's just not possible. We don't know yet because it's early days. But yeah, I can absolutely see a use case for this, and I would like it. And again, look, with the screen reader aspect, you're running your screen reader locally. But when it comes to what you're getting from the remote side, all it is basically a video stream. It's like a YouTube video or a Netflix video. It's sending you the video and the audio, which is important to us, of the remote PC. So it's not like you're able to interact with that itself. It's sort of a mind bender because you need to realize that you're using a remote PC and it's just sending the audio back to you. So there shouldn't be any sort of interference between a local screen reader and the remote screen reader.
Well,
myself.
Well, no, I know what you mean. But I mean, I've been doing a lot of this anyway through the machine I've got. So I've been using my PC and I've been using my MacBook. So only in the house, on the local network, right? So it's not the same. But it is kind of the same. I mean, that's how it will work. So I can sit downstairs with my MacBook and I can log into my PC via my remote desktop connection. And, you know, the lag is okay. I'll be honest, I think in some ways it's the perfect setup because, you know, you've got all the benefits of having the MacBook. If you like having a MacBook, you've got access to FaceTime and messages and everything you need on the sort of Mac side. But then you've also got the full Windows experience. And, you know, I've got JAWS running on there. And it runs okay. I'd say the experience in terms of using a screen reader via a remote desktop connection, which is to date my only experience of using a cloud, if you like, PC, is it's like using a Bluetooth headset. You get that level of lag. That's how I would put it. It's like having that Bluetooth headset. You know, you've got maybe like a 0.5 millisecond, maybe as much as that. And that's what you're kind of getting out of it. And I think that if that is the experience on the cloud PC, well, that would be okay, I guess, if you're not bothered by that. Some people are. I don't know how you feel about this, Tim. Would that bother you? I know some people get really annoyed about lag on Bluetooth with laptops and all the rest.
I've never had too bad of an experience with Bluetooth lag. But, yeah, I mean, if it's that minimal, I don't think I'd be too bothered by it, at least in the beginning, because I understand the process and what's going on. There are going to be people who are going to say, well, that's just too laggy. Why would I even bother with this? I'll just, you know, use the computer that I've got. You know, and they're just going to not want to use the entire thing because it's too laggy in the beginning. But I think over time, as they figured this out, I'm hopeful that it will have very minimal lag. But even if it is that little bit of lag, I don't really see a problem with that. I think it'll be fine, especially if you're able to save the cost and say, well, you know what, I'm just accessing it through a browser on my iPad or my iPhone or my Android phone or whatever that I already have. So I don't have to buy a PC for, you know, however much money and just use that one device. I think people are going to be probably more accepting of any kind of latency that happens because they didn't have to buy their own PC.
The iPad's a really interesting one. So I tried it on the iPad of using a remote desktop connection, the app that was updated for the M1 iPad and for Mac M1 as well. And I was using it and logged into the machine, logs in brilliantly, and you hit that command button, which in turn becomes the Windows key. And, you know, it's super fast. The audio's great. And I'm thinking, wow, I've got a PC on my iPad. This is great. And then I start typing and all I get is insert and page break. And I'm like, this is me hitting like F, G and H. And I'm thinking, what's going on? There's something weird in the settings of the keyboard. And I cannot understand why this isn't working. Now, I have fed this back to Microsoft and I hope others do too, because there's something clearly going wrong here, either on Windows side. And I guess it is the Windows side because it's obviously receiving the information and getting it wrong. And it's some, I have read a little bit into this, and it's something to do with Unicode characters versus some other type. It makes no sense to me, but something clearly going wrong there with that. I just think, you know, I can't be the only one that's going to want to use a keyboard with my Windows PC on an iPad Pro, right? I mean, I think most people are going to want to do that. Now, is that a screen reader problem? I'm kind of hesitant to turn off the screen reader to try it. Because I wouldn't be able to turn it back on, right? Because I can't get the keys to work.
No, it definitely isn't. There is just some sort of incompatibility between the two. There.
Something weird going on.
I've tried it. I tried the remote desktop client from my Windows laptop into my Mac Mini, and it worked so well. I was, right, this is amazing. This is a game changer, right? So I put it on my Android phone. I try it on my iPhone, and it just doesn't work because the keyboard control isn't there. So for us, screen reader users, we need to use the control keys, the modifier keys, and those don't get passed through on the Android app or the iOS app. And there is some, obviously, incompatibility there between the keyboard sends, you know, the keyboard keys that it's sending. For some reason, it doesn't work. But hopefully they can work on that.
Well, I hope they fix that, because can you imagine how cool that would be?
Exactly.
To have your iPhone.
Yeah.
So imagine your iPhone, right? We all love the iPhone. So you've got your keyboard. Tim's just got his new Logitech MX keys. Best keyboard in the world. you got your keyboard. You're going to be so excited. And you obviously, you can switch between different devices. You can go between your PC. If you're in the office, you can go between your phone, a different machine, whatever. Apple TV, if you wanted to use it for that. Then you can take it downstairs. You could sit with your iPhone and just connect via remote desktop into your PC and work away. How cool is that? But at the moment, you can't do it, which is really frustrating. So I hope they fix that problem, because that would make it a game changer for us, because we don't care about the screen. So it could be really cool.
So make it work.
Make it. Who can we talk to? Who can we get this sorted? Right, look, we've got time, I think, for one more email. Let's get one more in.
The next few are quite long, so let me just go down the list and pick up one from Shazad. Hi, email Andy, Robin, Steve, and of course, Tim.
Ooh, and of course, Tim.
And Sean.
Thank you.
Now, Robin's not here, so we're going to have to pass this message on to him. Can you ask Robin to do another demonstration of how to use the Ponties Media Downloader? Oh, it's that word again that I don't like.
Oh, Ponties.
Ponties. Ponts. The media downloader for Windows to download music, as I don't know if Narrator will allow it. I'm concerned of using it as expertly as Robin does. And so can Robin do a step-by-step guide for someone who is not proficient enough as he is? I enjoy the banter that you all do, and I hope you're all keeping safe and well. Thank you once again. That's from Shazad in Birmingham.
Well, you know, when Robin gets back, it's nice to know he's got homework.
Serves him right for leaving.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what you get. You know, you go away for a couple of weeks on your holly bags, then, you know, this is what you get in return. Yeah.
There shouldn't be any reason why Narrator
No, I can't imagine.
Wouldn't be able to handle using it. I mean, I don't know the app myself, but I can't think of a reason why narrator wouldn't be able to cope with it.
And it is well written for blind people, from my understanding. That's one of the draws about it. Clearly, I'm the only one that thinks that. Okay, fine. Okay, well...
Silent agreement.
Please. Yes.
Sorry, I was having a drink. Yes, no, you're absolutely right.
Aren't we all? well, look, we're going to get...
It's that time of the show.
Exactly. Well, look, we're going to get into the emails again next week, so we'll get more of those in. If you have any comments, and I'm sure you will, based on the conversation that we've had this week, I'm very interested to hear people's thoughts on the Amazon conversation, that more philosophical debate around pricing as well of products and what is acceptable for cost, because that, I think, is what it comes down to. What's acceptable? I mean, look, we'd all like free phones just given to us all the time, wouldn't we? It'd be a lot easier, but it's not the case, right? You've got to pay something. And how much is too much? How much is too little? What do you get for the too little? I mean, you know, someone might come on and say, well, I have a great experience on a phone that gave me, you know, it cost me 100 quid. But then you might get someone else saying, well, I bought a phone at 100 quid and it was the worst phone I ever got.
Yeah.
I do think the renewed thing, I mean, we're kind of joking around about some of that, but actually, I think it's... probably the most ethically correct thing to do is to, you know, probably buy some renewed kit if you can. And that is where you can save some money. You know, I bought a computer from a department store, let's just say, and I got it renewed for, actually only because this is where the Scottish in me comes out. I was in the store and I was looking at all these different things, and I'm like, and the guy comes over, he says, you know, we've got a bit around the back where we, you know, sell stuff cheaper. And I'm like, lead the way, my man, lead the way.
So could have been very dangerous.
Well, yeah, no, it could have been horribly wrong. Maybe just be careful with that one.
Yeah, we've got a van out back in the alley behind the store.
Yeah, if you want to just pop
follow
out.
Me.
Yeah. Follow, yeah, if he'd taken me out the store, we could maybe have had to have a different conversation, but... thankfully, you know, he was, you know, this is a thing they do. I didn't realize this, that they often put these products behind the scenes. And then if they don't have a product in stock, if they've got like the equivalent, they'll just sell you the refurbished one, which I think makes a lot of sense. So anyway, that was how I got my computer and saved an absolute fortune on it as well. So that's the good news. And you know, I encourage you to do that. But anyway, tell us your thoughts. TechTalk@rnib.org.uk. I didn't nearly forget. TechTalk@rnib.org.uk. I'm off to open my iPhone SE, guys. It's arrived my, 128 gig. It's the iPhone SE product red. Oh, I'm so excited. I love the color red.
That's what I got.
Is that the one you got? Oh, there you go.
That is 128 gig.
I also got the Beats. What are these? The Studio Buds.
Doesn't even know.
Beats Studio Buds.
That's what you get when you marry money.
That's what you don't even
care. Don't
know
what he's buying.
Just, yeah, whatever. We'll get into those later as well, so I'll tell you how that goes next week. And, yeah, keep in touch. As always, Tim Schwartz of LifeAfterBlindness.com. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen.
Sean Priest from wherever, The Shed in Manchester. Good to have you here, Sean. And Emails Andy. Thank you.
Thank you.